Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was just like, hey, man, like, what's it going to take for me to get drafted next year? This was me as a sophomore at Marshall. It was my first year there. And he just looked at me and just goes, hey, Dan, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. He goes, the kid had all the talent in the world, but he couldn't get out of the buffet line.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's interview series From Phenom to the Farm, where we're talking to former professional baseball players to reminisce about their playing days and what they learned on their journey from amateur ball to the professional ranks. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, we're joined by Dan Straley, who joined me live from quarantine in South Korea as he gears up for his second year in the KBO. Talk to Dan about how he went from a high school freshman who was sitting on the bench to a starter, to Division II baseball, to Marshall's starting rotation, all the way to the big leagues. We touched on his incredible 2012 season that launched him into the A's rotation and his career ups and downs as a journeyman. It was a real treat to have Dan on the pod, very grateful he was able to make the time while waiting out his quarantine. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure you subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We are so close to college baseball season. Joe Healy and Teddy Cahill are providing a lot of good content on that, so go check that out. For future guest info of this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Bandujo. But for now, let's talk to Dan Straley. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he's a right-hand pitcher who was a 24th round pick of the A's back in 2009, current member of the Lotte Giants in the KBO, Dan Straley. Dan, thanks so much for joining From Phenom to the Farm.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Before we get into it, Dan, you're also doing a podcast. Tell the folks about it. Plug yourself.
I'm doing a podcast. It's called The Journeyman Pod. We kind of did two segments to it. One segment was me just telling my story, my journey through baseball. We hit about 30 to 40 minutes of each level, all the way up through getting drafted up until the major leagues and through each team I've played on. And then we started having guests and just getting people to tell their stories in baseball, but not just baseball players, because this game is so much bigger than just the ball players themselves. We've gotten personalities, we've gotten strength coaches, we've gotten reporters, we've had front office members, we've had a sports agent, we've had just about anything you could think of, broadcasters, writers. We've tried to cover every aspect of the game and just get people's story, because not everyone has the talent to play the game, but a lot of people want to be involved in the game and are passionate about the game. So it's like, how did you find your way into the game kind of thing? And so we've got a lot of different stories that all tie back to the one like true passion of baseball. And it's been really fun.
Sounds like necessary listening for anyone who enjoys this podcast. So everyone go check that out. Dan, let's get into your story, into the From Phenom to the Farm version. Dan, what did your baseball future look like as you got into high school, growing up in Oregon? When you got into high school, is it realistic for you to think that you'd one day be a big leaguer?
Absolutely not. I was a kid that was short, overweight, and didn't even make like all-star teams growing up. I made one as a 10-year-old and one, I think, as like a 15-year-old. But I was like, I grew up in a tiny town of 15,000 people too. So it wasn't like it was like this vast area where the competition was so great. Like, it was the same, like, people making the all-star team every single year. And I just wasn't ever good enough to crack that type of thing. And so getting into high school, my freshman year, I actually was told by the coach, like, hey, you know, we don't really cut people, but, you know, you're not going to be playing. And I just said, like, you know, I really want to stay around. I'll catch bullpens. I'll throw batting practice. And I actually played one half inning of defense, and I had one at bat the whole year. That was it. That was my freshman year of baseball. My sophomore year, I had actually like lost a bunch of weight, and I went to a man that changed my life, Travis Zander, told me like, hey, if he was my football coach and said, if you want to play baseball for me in the spring, you're going to have to come wrestle and lose a bunch of weight and become a better athlete. So I did that, and that really changed my life, changed the trajectory of my life. And that was the year that he was like, hey, you know, you're going to do a little pitching for us. I think I threw like 20 innings maybe that year. had a few more at bats, but then actually was way better and way more involved in my summer ball. And then my family moved, and we moved to from Eastern Oregon to Western Oregon, and so now I'm in a much bigger area, much bigger town. And I get to a new high school, and they're just like, "Hey, what position do you play?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's easy. I play third base, left field, right field, first base. I pitch. Like, I can do anything." And like, I really could. I wasn't lying. I just wasn't like, you know, hey, I wasn't a starter where I came from, but you know, hey, like I can do these things. Like, I've practiced them all because Lord knows I've taken enough reps at each one. And I just kind of like, but I was a much better athlete at this point. I hit a growth spurt. I lost all that weight from wrestling. And be just was a better athlete, and that was the year that I was basically I got to the new high school, and I was basically like our pitching or our coach thought that it was best to put your best pitcher as the like your kind of like reliever. So I was pitching like literally every single game. The starter would go like 3 or 4 innings, and then I would finish the game. And we played Monday, Wednesday, Friday, so I was pitching a lot. And that was kind of like the first time I actually got into pitching, but I still really wasn't thinking that like, hey, this guy, I have a chance to be a big leaguer. Like, I was just a kid trying to have fun. I love baseball. I was just having fun playing baseball. Like, no aspirations of even probably college at this point. Just was having a great time playing.
Well, so when did playing college ball get on your radar? When did it become something you want to do? Because, you know, spoiler alert about your college choice, you have to really love baseball to go play at a smaller school out of high school.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what I was walking into, but the idea of me trying to play baseball in college was simply geared around the idea of me finding out how much college actually cost. And I was like, man, if I could just go get a college scholarship somewhere and knock some of this cost of education down, like, I have to get a job anyway. Like, I might as well make my job baseball in college and get paid through a scholarship instead of having to go work, you know, flipping burgers to pay for my tuition. And I get to do something I love. So that was really where it came down to. And I had like, you know, a couple of very small offers and like junior college stuff. Like, it was like, you know, if I could look back and say what I should have done, obviously things worked out for me just fine, but I should have probably gone to junior college ball out of high school instead of taking a D2 offer for a very low amount. But at the same time, like, I just wanted to play baseball. Like, once that became the next dream, like, all of a sudden the cost of things was just, you know, some loan I was getting handed. I didn't really take into account what that meant as a 17-year-old. You know, why would I? I just was going to school to play baseball. So it wasn't even then that, you know, there's just more like, how can I knock a few bucks off education is really how I started off my whole journey into baseball at a higher level than high school.
So you head to Western Oregon, Division II school. What happened in the year at Western Oregon that you had that had you starting in Conference USA the next year?
I did not realize that I signed up for 25-hour bus rides, 4 guys to hotel rooms, like Motel 6 hotel rooms. Terrible food, no laundry. Like, it just was not fun. It just wasn't. It made college baseball just not fun for me. And I went down, I played summer ball down in California, and I was trying to find a new place to go. I was trying to find a new place to go walk on to, trying to find a junior college, trying to find something. But, like, I didn't know what to do. But I knew that nothing could happen until I got released from Western Oregon. So it was the last year you could get released in one, go to a new spot. And that was quite a headache, but I got released, and I ended up released from my scholarship essentially, and I was like, finally got that. And then I went ahead and walked on. I found out like on a Thursday that I was granted my release from Western Oregon, and I walked on and left on Sunday and walked on to Marshall.
How did you pick Marshall? Because it wasn't Marshall. West Virginia is not exactly close to Oregon.
It's not at all. But I played summer ball with a guy that went there. And it's looking back at it, like, this was not the most thought out process ever. Like, I played summer ball with this guy, Andrew Blaine, and Andrew Blaine told me, he goes, I'm telling you right now, like, if you just walk on my school, he was going to be a 5th-year senior. He was the captain of the team. He was just like, hey, if you walk on out there, I promise you, you will be fine. And like, to the point of like, when I flew to West Virginia a couple months later, Andrew was the one that came and picked me up at the airport. Like, he was dead set on this. Like, dude, I'm telling you, this is going to be life-changing for you. This is going to be what you want. Because he knew, him and I talked all the time. We were driving around California, playing summer ball, working kids' camps. Like, we spent a lot of time together. But I take this opportunity, I take this chance and walk on. And we end up having two guys leave our school at the end of the fall semester. And I gave up one hit in the fall. And my head coach essentially gave me both their scholarships to stay. Because I had told him at the same time, like, hey, you know, I do need a scholarship if I'm going to stick around here. If not, I need to go probably back to Oregon somewhere to a junior college where I can afford to go to school better. And so he'd actually given me both scholarships. So I was really close to a full, I was at like 95% after 1 year or after one semester of martial education. And so he really put a lot of value in me and really put a lot of trust in me to be a good pitcher on that team. And yeah, it went from a walk-on to a weekend starter to just kind of, obviously, you know, getting drafted a couple years later. But it was a stepping stone for me. It was a scary adventure. It was something that just took a big risk on myself. But I've been gambling on myself my whole career, and that was just really the start of it all.
I think that's a really fun thing about college baseball, and especially the summer ball culture, is like, I played at a small school, and every year, every summer, you have new guys show up at school, even like at semester, just because like, oh, hey, I met so-and-so at summer ball and they talked me into coming down here, and vice versa. It's just this very fun, like inter-transfer portal melting pot kind of thing. But so you go to Marshall, you're in the rotation, you're pitching a lot. Your junior year, at what point did you start to hear from scouts? And, you know, when did you go from a guy who at one point had to walk on to a D1 school to a guy who is a drafted junior?
Yeah, so it, I told you about when I had that sophomore year in high school where I had to like lose weight to like play baseball, right? Well, it kind of happened again in college where I gained a bunch of weight, and I was standing in the outfield with a scout actually talking to him. And I was just like, hey, man, like, what's it going to take for me to get drafted next year? This was me as a sophomore in at Marshall. It's my first year there. And he just looked at me and just goes, hey, Dan, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. He goes, the kid had all the talent in the world, but he couldn't get out of the buffet line.
I was about to say, what is it in college that makes you gain weight? I had no idea.
And he just like, right. And he says that to me. And it's like, I was expecting this profound, like, you know, hey, you know, make it, have a better slide or have this. And he was just like, dude, you have all the talent in the world, but you got to lose weight. Like, you're just a big guy. You've always been a big guy, but like, it's, you're no one's going to draft you looking like this. Like, people aren't going to think you take yourself seriously. People aren't going to think you work hard. And like that, I didn't take that personally in the way that like, I am like going to go home and like be upset and be, you know, just cry myself to sleep type of thing. I took that as like, hey, dude, if you really want to chase this dream, if you really want to do this, like, you're going to have to change some aspects of your life. And so I did.
Do you think if you wouldn't have been told that and still got drafted but went out but hadn't been told that about taking yourself seriously and taking your conditioning seriously, that you would have made it to the big leagues?
I really don't think so, because I don't think I would have been drafted. Like, looking back at it, like, I don't think I would have been drafted. And I would have got, even if I was drafted, I would have probably continued on that same trajectory of, and it wasn't like I was taking myself serious. It's not that I wasn't taking, I just didn't know. I didn't know how to eat correctly. I didn't know how to lift weights correctly. I didn't understand the importance of sleep. I didn't understand the importance of nutrition. I didn't understand that, like, it's like, you can't just crush pizza and expect to like get stronger. Like, I didn't understand these things. Like, I seriously didn't. And it sounds ridiculous to say in today's age, because we have all this information shoved in front of us all the time on all these social media platforms and all this kind of stuff. And we have all these big strength coaches we can follow. We have everything out there at our fingertips, but that just didn't exist back in 2008. It just wasn't even a thing. And so, and ironically, I went to a guy on my team and talked to him about what I needed to do in the weight room as well. And he is now the major league strength coach for the Twins, but that's another story. But I was surrounded by people on my team in college that had unbelievable skill sets, not necessarily just in baseball. We have guys in the front offices. We have guys in coaching. We have guys, it's kind of just, it's this big melting pot of guys that happen to be at Marshall together. But they, the aspect of learning how important sleep, nutrition, strength conditioning, all that kind of stuff was to me. It started there in that outfield. I was at Tulane is where all that kind of started for me. And that has become my favorite aspect of this game. yes, I love wins. I love striking people out. I love all these kind of stuff. But the strength and conditioning aspect of this game has become my absolute favorite because it is the one place that I can go fail and that's okay. It's the one place that if I go give my everything, I and then I fail, like it's okay because I'm giving everything I got. And at the same token, like it's the one place that like I just get to go be me and nobody's watching. Like it's one of my favorite things is to just go in there and just work my butt off in the weight room, work my butt off on whatever I'm if I'm running, if I'm cycling, no matter what it is, like I've grown just such a passion to that side of the game. And I think that's really allowed me to play this game professionally for 13 years now.
So you sign as a 24th round pick for a $12,500 bonus. Do I have that correctly?
Oh yeah. All so, $12,500, $8,000 after taxes.
So you went from Western Oregon where you're dealing with the small school, long bus ride life where, you know, bad food, living tough. Then you go to Marshall where I'd imagine life was a little better. Big Division I school. Then you're a late round pick with a $12,500 bonus before taxes and a minor league baseball paycheck. What was adjusting to that minor league baseball life, that off the field life like?
See, that's like the difference is like that was a better I actually had money in my pocket. I never had that before. I had money that I earned, not that my parents gave me like a couple bucks here and there for like, you know, try to get by at college type of thing, but like I had money in my pocket that I had earned. Like that felt amazing. I was staying at host family's house in Vancouver, Canada, getting like a couple hundred bucks every other week, you know, paying X amount of dollars to Glen Magic as our clubby there in Vancouver. Like I just couldn't like I didn't care. I didn't realize that I was should be like, you know, like working towards a different career. Like, no, that was never an option. Like the money didn't matter because I knew that the goal I was chasing wasn't to be a minor league baseball player. It was like these guys are paying us just enough money to get by to see if you're worthy to be a major league baseball player. See if you're good enough to be one of the under 20,000 men to ever play this game at the highest level. Like that was what I knew I was chasing. And so I was, maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was okay with being paid so little because I knew that there was a grander goal in mind or something bigger, much bigger than that I was chasing.
Was there difficulty in adjusting to minor league baseball competition? Because your first couple seasons, especially in 2011 in the Cal League, your numbers are actually a bit better than they were at Marshall. Were there any like real struggles on the field that you had to adjust to?
So I essentially had like a fastball when I got drafted. Like I didn't really have any good off speed pitches. And on my way out the door at Marshall, one of my teammates, Shane Farrell, had showed me his slider grip. And his dad, John Farrell, has been in the game for a long time as a manager and as a pitcher and as a pitching coach. And she showed me this slider grip, and I didn't really try it in college. And I got to pro ball, and I knew I needed to develop a better breaking ball. And so it's basically that conversation I had in the outfield with a teammate back in 2009 in college has changed my life because that's still the same slider I throw today, which has gotten me hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of strikeouts over my lifetime. And so I now have a pitch that I did not have before. And so I was never a strikeout pitcher in high school. I was never a strikeout pitcher in college. All of a sudden I get to Pro Bowl and I'm a strikeout pitcher because I've always had to command my fastball because that was really all I had before was a fastball and then a couple really bad off-speed offerings. And so now all of a sudden I have a decent slider at this point to go along with fastball command. Two good pitches at low levels in minor leagues is going to take you a long way.
So I was going to ask that about like where do strikeouts come from? Because you've always been, even when you got into the big leagues, you've always been a higher strikeout rate guy. Is it all about stuff? Is it about command? So did it all just come from developing that good second pitch?
It was so much more than that. Like it was Gil Patterson hammering into us his pitching matrix. From day one, him hammering into us, this is what it takes to be a major league pitcher, and just like really building the foundations up from the minor, like actually developing pitching along the way. I was such a product of the Oakland A's minor league development system under Gil Patterson and all the pitching coaches I had along the way. I mean, Craig Lefferts and Jimmy Escalante and Craig Lefferts again and Don Chulze, Scott Emerson, Ricky Rodriguez, like these guys poured so much into me as a pitcher, and to the point where like you kind of felt like you were like the only guy that they cared about, right? But each guy would say that. Each guy felt like they were getting all the attention. Each guy felt like they were getting all the attention because these guys were so good at just developing pitchers, developing players one at a time, but also as a group. And so we got better. Like the group of pitchers that I got drafted with, like we got better together. And we all moved up together each year, and then we started getting traded, divided, called up, sent down. Like that was like year three when that kind of stuff started happening. But it was just really just overall pitching development. Like the Oakland A's really did a great job of that when I was coming up through the system, for sure.
Well, let's talk about year three. Heading into the 2012 season, did you know what was coming to your, like, did you anticipate having the kind of season that you had?
I did not. I was driving and riding in the car with AJ Griffin to Midland, Texas, and we were just like, one of the last things Gil Patterson told us, like, hey, you really want to stand out? Like, lead the league in something. And, like, we were just sitting there thinking, and, like, AJ and I were like, okay, let's try to lead the league in ERA and strikeouts. Like, why not? Like, that's a great pitcher thing to lead in. If I can be the best strikeout pitcher and have the lowest ERA, I'm probably doing pretty good for myself. And like neither one of us made had the chance to, him and I are roommates, because he got called up before the All-Star break and I got called up at the All-Star break to AAA. But we were both doing exactly that. We were leading the league in those things. And it was like, I think it took almost a month for anyone to pass me in strikeouts. Like I was gone for a month before somebody caught up to where I was in the Texas League that year. All I was doing was throwing a ton of strikes. I said this that whole year when every time I got talked to by anybody, like media-wise, like I'd be like, I'm not trying to strike anyone out. I'm throwing strikes. They're just missing it. Like I really was. Like I was commanding the ball. I was my slider. But that was the year two I learned the changeup, which was a big development thing for me. So now I have a fastball, slider, and changeup going. But there, like that year was unexpected in the sense of like I did not expect to go AA, AAA, big leagues by August. That was never like the expectation. Each year I just showed up with like, okay, I'm going to be the best pitcher on my team. Like that's my goal, is how can I be the pitcher of the year at my level? I never had any aspirations of trying to move up. I just had aspirations of trying to be the best pitcher on my team here and try to win a championship. I never even like really thought about getting called up because I was a 24th rounder. I never expected to get called up. I expected the only time I was ever going to move up was at the end of the season because I dominated that level for an entire year and proved to them that I deserved to go to the next level. That was my approach. And so when I got called at midnight to find out that, hey, you're going to AAA in the morning, like it was an absolute shock. Like I was not prepared for it, but I couldn't have been happier to do it. I just was not prepared for it.
When you got to Sacramento, was there a specific moment or a start or anything where you it finally crossed your mind, like, I might be a big leaguer this year?
Yeah, it was that moment for me came when I, like, one hitter up at, like, 8 1/3 innings of one hit ball. And that hit was in the first inning. And we were up 1-0. Like, it was like this. But I was matched up against like a really good Tacoma Rainiers team that year, and it was just kind of like me and Danny Holtzen were going at it this game. It was a lot of fun, and the game actually ended up going like 18 innings, but it was like that game was like a stretch run for me where I had like a .9 at like 70 innings in AAA, and it was like there's no way that this team can't call me up now. And it was like every single game was quality start. Every single game. I was on a 19 game in a row quality start run. And it was like every single game was quality starts. Every single game was the same. You knew what you were going to get. Every game was like 6 innings plus of 3 hits or less. Like 7 innings, 2 hits. 8 innings, 1 hit. 8 innings, 2 hits. 7 innings, 3 hits. Like it was almost like video game stuff, it felt like. And all it was I had Anthony Recker catching me. And Anthony Recker just said, hey, dude, if you want to go to the big leagues, don't shake me. Like, I know these hitters. I've been here for a couple of years. You don't. Just don't shake me. And you'll be just fine. And then when Anthony wasn't catching me, it was Josh Donaldson. So I had two really good catchers behind the plate that were very capable of knew the hitters, knew what was going on. And so I just was trusting the older guys in front of me to lead the way and was just having fun doing it. I was just a little farm kid, essentially, from Eastern Oregon, just throwing baseballs for a living and on the verge of getting called up to the big leagues. And it wasn't even, I was just trying to find a way to get on the Arizona Fall League team and get on the 40-man roster somewhere.
Well, you get on the 40-man, but a little bit earlier. Walk me through that call-up.
The call-up was my fiance at the time. She had actually flown into town the night I got called up, and I hadn't seen her since, like, I left home, essentially, back in February. And she comes into town, and there's some confusion on when I'm pitching. She's only in town for a few days. And I'm like, hey, I walk out. I find out, and I walk out to the parking lot and tell her. And I'm like, hey, I was supposed to pitch on, this was like a Wednesday night. And I was like, hey, I'm supposed to pitch tomorrow, Thursday, but they just moved it to Friday. And she was supposed to leave Saturday. And she's like, are you kidding me? I was like, yeah, but, and also too, I'm like, I'm not going to be pitching here. We're going to be pitching in Oakland against the Blue Jays. And she was just like, what? Like, are you kidding me? What? Like, because back to real life stuff for a second, like her and I were getting married that next off season. And we didn't know how we were going to pay for housing. We didn't know, between the two of us, it was 2012 and both of our cars were like 1997 old cars that weren't running very well. We didn't know where we were going to live. We didn't know how we were going to do a lot of things, but we were just like, we were engaged for almost 2 years, like just trying to wait it out, waiting for her to finish up her education, waiting for me to hopefully get to the big leagues and just try to find it. We did not know how we were going to do this. And so that moment for us was so much bigger than like a baseball game. It was like, we're going to have an opportunity to just be able to focus on like baseball this next off season instead of trying to pay the bills and train for baseball. Like such a dilemma that most ball players have is how do I train for my sport, but also how do I feed myself? Or when you start getting married and having kids, how do I take care of my family? And so you have to, I was never forced to like worry about those types of things. And so that moment for us was amazing, but it was just, it was finding out I was going to the big leagues was something special. And it happened so fast, I had no time to get nervous about it. I found out on Wednesday and I started Friday night. Like it was incredible. The Oakland A's, it was an amazing thing they did. They had me start Friday night, firework night in Oakland in front of 35,000 people. It was my first big league game. And so you can't get much better than that to just go onto the grand stage in a packed house. Like that doesn't get much better.
I want to get into what you were just talking about though, about how your off season was before you got into the big leagues. Once you get a year in after your rookie season, what does a year of big league money and resources allow as far as your training, your body maintenance? Like, what changes did you make once you became a big leaguer and how you spent your off season?
Up until I was in the big leagues, my off seasons were spent at Gold's Gym. I was a student at the University of Oregon, so I transferred over there for my education. And so I'd get up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, go work out. And then from there, I would go to Dick's Sporting Goods and I would work usually from like 8 until like noon or 2. And then I'd go to class. And then I'd go to at the time, my fiance's house, her parents' house. And they would usually eat dinner over there and do homework. And then I'd go home, get a few hours of sleep, and repeat the cycle. And it was just that cycle over and over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the big leagues. I have some money where I don't have to worry about the Dick's Sporting Goods part of my life. I can't go to school because school starts in September, but we're always in playing then. Instead of having to worry about going to work at Dick's Sporting Goods and having to go to school because I couldn't go to school anymore because baseball is being played through September when school starts in September. So that was no longer, I'm not even going to say a distraction. That was no longer a part of life at that point. I would come home and take a couple weeks off, and I found a gym in town where I lived. That was I found a personal trainer where he was a retired NFL player that was actually doing training of other sorts, and I gave him like a 6-month heads up, and he did as much learning as he could about training throwers and baseball players, and ended up expanding his business off of it, which was great too, because he was able to then incorporate baseball into his training. But he, so instead of just, going to Gold's Gym, I now had a trainer. I had, a place that I was buying meals from. So I wasn't just getting, I wasn't cooking on my own so much. I was getting, prepared meals, knowing like, okay, here's my intake. Here's my recovery after I work out. Like I'm eating this. Like it was so.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Instead of just like having to do everything around someone else's schedule, it was like baseball was the center of the off season. I had a very, you know, I get up, here's what I eat for breakfast. I go train, I come home, and then I have half a day to whatever I want. Instead of, you know, it's just like, it was kind of like, okay, this is what I was working for. This is what the goal was. The goal wasn't like, let me play baseball and then come home and work at Dick's Sporting Goods 40 hours a week to pay the bills. Like that was never the dream, but I was very grateful for that because if it wasn't for the income I generated from working at Dick's Sporting Goods, I wouldn't have been able to keep playing baseball. But it wasn't until I got to the big leagues that finally like turned itself over and I was able to cut that part out and just really focus on baseball only.
So the next year after that initial call-up year, you make the opening day roster. You go back down after Bartolo gets back. You dominate in AAA, and then you're back in the big leagues for the whole year. What is the toughest part about adjusting to the big leagues besides just the hitters are better? Is there anything that surprised you? Is it, you know, as far as enduring a full year in the show?
I honestly don't remember like the adjustment part. Yeah, that would have been a lot better, probably answered about 6 or 7 years ago. But I think I think the biggest thing that, if I remember correctly, this everything else going on, not baseball related. Like there's media requests and there's this outing or that outing or can you go do this? Can you go do that? Like there's a lot more time demands. Whereas like when you're in the minor leagues, it's just kind of like show up and play baseball. But up here, it's like you show up and play baseball, but even you go out and play catch, there's cameras on you. You always have to be on. You always have to be aware of what you're doing, like making sure, you know, it's someone's always watching you. So you're just like always, it's just kind of different in that regard. You know, and then just the process of travel. Like, yeah, big league travel is great. It's chartered flights. It's nice hotels. It's this, it's that. But I played in some cities where it was brutal travel. Like the Marlins flew the second most air miles in baseball to the Mariners. The A's weren't that far behind. So we're talking like, you know, just hours upon hours on airplanes. You replace airplanes with buses. It's like, you know, all the same. Like you're just, it's hard travel. It's time zone changes. It's all this kind of stuff. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like I'm not complaining about these things. I'm just talking about the adjustments that it took to get up there. And so those were some of the bigger ones, just adjusting to changing time zones so much, adjusting to, you know, just like the not normal sleep schedules of, you know, finishing a game and then flying across the country. Some of these other things, you know, the time constraints of a lot more people wanting to say hi or meet up for meals or, you know, your different bigger cities in the country where you tend to know a lot more people. So it's just like kind of a lot of the little things like that started popping up everywhere.
Is there any completely getting used to the travel and the sleep aspect of baseball? I mean, you've got, you know, years and years of service time now. Is there any, does it just get easier? Or can you, is it, are you fully acclimated to that lifestyle at this point?
Oh, 100% fully acclimated. That was like a, like, you know, I was digging deep, trying to think of an adjustment. It was, you get used to it pretty quick. Like I learned how to sleep on airplanes. I learned how to change time zones. Like it doesn't even bother me changing time zones now. I figured out my adjustment for that. I figured out how to beat that for myself. Like all these little things, like it just kind of, you just get used to it. The job is so amazing that there's like, it's really hard to find anything to complain about. Right. And so like really trying to like think of like just even the adjustment was kind of difficult, but like it's all an adaption. And so once you get used to that, like it's just business as usual.
Well, in that rookie year, you get a playoff start. What are the 24 hours before a playoff start? Like, is there a difference in a routine? What are the nerves like?
Honestly, there wasn't. Like I had explained this to people before. I was like, I have a feeling it's going to be like minor league playoff starts because when you're in the minor leagues and you're in the playoffs, like that's the level you're supposed to be at. Like that's a stressful situation. That's your playoffs. And so when you're in the big leagues, like, that's your playoffs. Like, you're supposed to be there. Like, you're ready for it. Like, they wouldn't put you there if you weren't ready for it. And so I was probably more nervous for my very first playoff start at Kane County Cougars than I was for my first playoff start and for the Oakland A's against the Tigers in the ALDS.
That's a nice place to mentally be.
That is, because that was how the A's, that was how I was prepared as a pitcher, was like, this is every level you're at, that's your big leagues. When you're in low A, that's your big leagues. When you're in high A, that's your big leagues. When you're in triple A, and then when you're in the big leagues, that's your big leagues. And so everywhere I was at, it was taking the same level of seriousness. It was all had the same level of importance. And so it didn't matter what level you were at, that was where you were supposed to be. Like, you were at the peak of where you were ready to be at. And so when they give me the ball for that game, I knew I was ready for it and went out there and gave it my everything.
Something a bit different than nerves is adrenaline. And like I've heard, you know, stories of golfers will club down, you know, if it's a big shot or like a, you know, a shot to win a major, it's your 7-iron, you know, your 7-iron distance, you might hit an 8-iron because you've got a little extra juice. Is there any adjustment when you pitch in a big game, like a playoff game or just, you know, a big game in September? Is there any conscious awareness of I need to tone things down at some point or I need to lock in?
I remember this like vividly. I was warming up for the game and like I was so amped up and I was like coming in for first pitch and I was just like I'm probably going to be like 94. Like I feel so strong. I feel so good. First pitch 89 and I was like uh-oh. Going to be a long day. Like it just like but honestly, I don't remember much of the game. Like I don't remember really pitching in the playoffs. Like I don't really remember that day. Like, does that make sense? Like, I don't really remember that. I remember other games more vividly than I remember that game. But there's a lot of moments and a lot of games I don't remember that much because I remember at bats, I remember pitches, I remember certain things. But, like, that one is kind of a blur. I think I was so focused on being in the moment that I kind of, like, just was, yeah, like, I don't remember much about it. I don't remember, like, I can't, like, relate to that experience. That was a really unique time and place to have that many people, like, you know you're there's millions watching on TV. But I wouldn't say I had to like, you know, club down and revert else. Like I was just trying to bring it. And I was just like, if I have to throw 98 sliders today, then I'm going to throw 98 sliders today. Cause it does not matter. Nothing else matters more than today.
So your next year in 2014, what is the process of finding out you've been dealt in a big trade? Probably the biggest trade of that year. That trade deadline season, if I remember correctly, the Smarsh deal, both the actual stuff you have to get, you know, from one place to another, you have to move, and then the mental side of adjusting. And you've kind of gone on as we've been talking about how much you respect how the Oakland A's brought you up as a pitcher and all the work they put in. How do you, you know, mentally grasp with, hey, I have a new employer now. I'm not an Oakland A anymore.
Yeah, I felt like I got dumped by my high school girlfriend for the very first time. Was like the actual feeling. You're just like,
just a tough feeling. It's a good way of quitting.
Like this, there's just like that knot in your stomach, and it's just like, what? We're done. Like I thought we were happy together. I was going through some shoulder weakness, I guess you could say. Like I was pitching, but it just wasn't the same. And I was coming off the year where I'd thrown more innings than I'd ever thrown. I think I had some sort of like small tweak in the off season that I just was never addressed properly at the spring training. I remember going to my trainers and trying to talk to them about it. And there was, all of us were banged up at some level and they just kind of pushed me to the side and were like, you're fine. Like they kind of triaged us and were like, you're fine. And so I just kept pitching and it just, nothing was the same. And so when I got traded, it was kind of a shock. I did not expect it by any means. Cause I'd been told for so many years that I was untradeable. I'd heard from the A's for so many years that I was untradeable. But you always are until you're not, type of thing. And so when I got traded, I was in Reno. And I just woke up the next morning and drove back to Sacramento, rented a car, drove back to Sacramento, packed up my stuff, and flew across the country. And it was kind of a weird ordeal. I get to the Cubs, and they're just kind of like, this isn't the guy that we thought we were trading for. And I'm like, well, this is weak. Like, my arm needs to get, it needs some work. Like, there's something going on. And they're like, there's nothing in your charts to say that. Like, what, like everyone was just kind of confused, and I was confused, and everyone was confused what's happening here. And so, yeah, it was like all that going on, all the emotion of packing and moving and changing places and the stress of, like, why am I not throwing over 90 right now? Why is my best bullet being, like, 87, like, type of thing? Like, why is, like, am I 85 at times? Like, what's going on with my arm was, like, such a concern. And it was just like, I didn't understand it. It was the first time I'd ever had any sort of weakness or any sort of like struggle. It was really the first time I'd ever failed as a pitcher. And then to get traded in the middle of it was just like, what is going on?
Well, and from the beginning of 2014 to the end of 2015, you have six different home cities because you're traded again in the 2014 yeah. offseason. How do you stay focused on your future in baseball when you keep getting shuffled around? Like, how many different apartments did you live in?
I don't even want to know how many different apartments I lived in. I lived in hotels a lot. Like when I was in, like this last year, for example, when I got sent down from Baltimore, or 2 years ago, I got sent down by Baltimore. I just lived in a hotel the rest of the season. Even when I got traded, I just lived in a hotel. When I was in Iowa Cubs, I was only there for like a month and a half, or no, six, yeah, a month and a half, 6 weeks. And so I just lived in a hotel there. Like when I got called up to the Cubs, I lived in a hotel there. You know, it's just kind of like the next apartment I even got was, I had one in Fresno, and then I had one in Cincinnati. And it was just kind of like, I didn't even bother with, like, when I called up to Houston, I didn't even have time to get an apartment there. Like, I just stayed at hotels. Like, I just, it was, and it wasn't until after the Houston year where I was still dealing with the same kind of weakness, the same kind of, like, why is the ball not coming out the way I know it's capable of? And that was when I found Driveline. And that was like a big game changer for me. This was back before Driveline was Driveline that we know of now. This was back when Driveline was still just kind of like a small operation that opened up at noon and closed at 6 p.m. at night, like type of thing. Like this was like a Driveline that no one ever even heard of really at this point. And so I go up there and I find these guys and we start developing a program. I'm working with Kyle Bodie directly and Matt Daniels, and we're really just getting a remote training program for me and going through that stuff. And the first thing that we did was just get my shoulder strength back, which seemed like along the way that was something that maybe a trainer could have helped me with along the way, but no one ever did. No one ever took the time to like, hey, let's find out what's actually going on in here instead of just keep putting Band-Aids on this problem. Keep just like treating the symptom. Let's actually find out what the issue is and fix that. And so we got that stuff fixed, and it really kind of altered redefined or altered the course my career was headed on at that point.
Well, you get that figured out, and then you go into to spring training 2016, and then you're put on waivers claimed by the Reds, like right at the beginning of the season. What made was it all a health thing that enabled you to find success in Cincinnati in 2016? Because that's not an easy place to pitch.
Yeah, it was health and confidence. I had nothing to lose. I go into that spring training, and Brent Strom really wanted me to make the Astros. He really wanted me to be a part of that team. He goes, I really think you can spin the ball. I really think you can pitch. And he goes, that's what we need is pitchers. We don't just need throwers. We need pitchers. And he goes, but you're going to have to do a lot of work this spring, and you're going to have to prove yourself. And so one of the first things he had me do was just, he's like, I need you to put up some special numbers velocity-wise. He goes, I don't even care if it's a strike. He goes, I just need you to put up some numbers every now and then so we can just point at this and be like, look, he can throw this. He can throw that. And so like that spring I got up to 95, and I was just like, I obviously that's not sustainable. Like I was like, there's no way I can do this. Like to every pitch, like that was what I was thinking. And like, so I'm like 93, 94, 95 out of the bullpen at spring training. And while that didn't get me a job with the Astros, I got traded to the Padres, but having those velo flashes probably helped that. And so I get over to the Padres, DFA'd and claimed by the Reds, and I get to the Reds, and maybe it's because they saw me at spring training. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know where they saw me along the line. And I make that team. I show up, I fly across the country again, show up to Indianapolis where they're doing a scrimmage, like an exhibition game against the Pirates, and throw a bullpen. I haven't slept. I got up at 6 a.m. for a physical, rode a bus a few hours from Cincinnati over to Indy, get off the bus, don't really stretch that much because they need me to throw a bullpen now. It's terrible. Afterwards, I got the GM, the assistant GM, manager, pitching coach, bench coach behind me watching, and they're just like, yep, congrats, you made the team. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, this is my worst bullpen I've ever thrown, and you guys are just like, well, you're all we got. So And
did anyone tell you anything past you made the team? Like, hey, we're expecting this out of you this year. We'd like you to be a rotation stalwart this year. Was it just like, hey, you made the team. Hope you're still around next week.
I was the long guy. Yeah, I was right-handed and I was healthy. So, like, I was the long guy in the bullpen. And I remember, like, in hindsight of it, it's kind of funny. I remember going in after I didn't pitch for the first week of the season. And I went into the weight room every single day after the game. And I lifted and I ran. And my manager, Brian Price, would come in the weight room after the games, after he was done with his media stuff, and he would ride the bike and decompress and that kind of stuff, or go for a jog or work out. And so finally one day he was like, you know, what are you doing? Like, are you wearing yourself out? And I was like, oh, I'm not wearing myself out on the field, so I'm just trying to make sure I stay ready back here. And he was like, you know, okay. And then I said something like, you know, along the lines of like, I'm just making sure that I'm staying ready to be a starting pitcher whenever you need me. And he was like, Dan, I need you to be the best long guy possible. I don't need you to worry about being a star. I need you to be a long guy for me. And I said, I understand. But I was like, I know I'm a starting pitcher. Like, that's my pedigree. That's what I'm good at. That's why I'm here. And it took a couple weeks, like 2 weeks into the season, he came up to me and said, hey, I need you to make three starts for me. We had a guy coming back from injury that got delayed. I need you to make three starts for me. And those three turned into 30, and I got a nice little trophy for being the Cincinnati Reds Pitcher of the Year. Like, won 15 ball games, 190 innings from a guy that was supposed to be the long guy in the bullpen. And I just never gave up. I never quit. I had a teammate, Caleb Cotham, that was guiding me through how to use driveline even better in season for my very first season of ever using it. And he's now the pitching coach for the Phillies. Like, I had a lot of people around me that knew what they were doing, and a lot of just, I was very open. I had nothing to lose. I was supposed to be the long guy and end up leading that staff. And so it was just kind of like, here we go. I'm just trusting myself. Barnhart was amazing in teaching me how to be a better pitcher. He taught me how to pitch in the small ballpark with my stuff. He taught me how it just like kept going. And I was just so open to everything. I was trying to be the most coachable ball player possible. And it really led to me having a lot of success there.
You have this great year, and when I was doing some prep for this interview, I was looking through your Instagram, and I saw on January 18th, 2017, you posted on Instagram, excited about getting the season going, saying, let's go Reds. On January 19th, 2017, you're traded to the Marlins, and this time you're not the prospect package, you're the person who's being traded for. Is there an ego boost when that happens?
There wasn't an ego boost, there was just so much going on. My wife was pregnant, we just got housing secured in Cincinnati. She just got her nursing license transferred over to Ohio. Like, there was so much other stuff going on. It was just kind of like, I don't even know where, like, the Marlins. I don't even know who's on the Marlins.
So, like, a heads up would have been nice.
Those don't happen. But the irony was like, not even irony. The funny thing was, is that I got traded on January 19th twice. I got traded to the Astros on January 19th, and I got traded to the Marlins on January 19th. I actually found out the night before that I was traded. I found out, thanks to just the way the world works, I found out the night before my team even had a chance to call me, before anything was even announced, I knew that I was traded. And so there was that, but that's not really a heads up. Like, that's just a phone call out of the blue from my agent. But it was a shock. I really didn't think, I thought I'd be at Cincinnati for a while. But no, went to Miami and, just started the next journey. And that was really where I started to just really accept the fact that, like, I'm never going to be in the same place a long time. And that's okay. Like, I don't have the same kind of career as some of these people that we idolize growing up in baseball, that play in the same place forever. The Jeters and the Kershaws and Chipper Jones and I just some of the guys that play in the same place forever. You know, Yachty and Waino and some of these guys. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be like the 99% of other ball players that just fight and scratch and claw for this job here, that job here. I might play 13 years for 13 different teams, and that's okay. Like, this is my journey. So that was where I really started to understand that, like, it's okay for me. It's okay. This is just my path. This is my career. This is the way it's going for me.
Is there any upside or any, like, a silver lining you can point to of being a journeyman, of being a guy who's been around a lot of different places?
I've seen so much of this world, and it's taken me to Asia now. You know, it took an injury for me to come overseas, but I was just hoping for a job and these guys gave it to me. But baseball has given me the opportunity to see so many cultures, so many different groups of people, be as part of so many different communities. I've lived in apartments in Fresno. I've lived in apartments in Miami, Florida, Kentucky. I've spent time in Chicago. I've spent many, many weeks in all the major cities in America. Like, baseball has given me so much in terms of just like life and life experiences and just people experiences that I can't even ever pay this game back for that. But there's that's been one of the cool things, that I have seen so many different things and met so many different awesome people along the way that, you know, I can't relate to my buddy I work out with in the offseason. It's the longest tenured Yankee. He's been with the organization for 14 years and he's their backup catcher now. And it's like, I can't relate to that. I've never been the guy that's been at one place for 14 years, so I have no clue what that's like. But at the same time, he has no clue what it's like to see all the different organizations I've been a part of and meet all the different people I've met.
July of that first year with the Marlins, you become a father. How does fatherhood change how you go about your day-to-day and your career?
Oh, that's a whole other podcast. We need a whole other hour for that. But no, it's just all part of the way life is gone. You know, luckily for us, like, as much as you try to plan having a kid, we were able to do that. So we were, it was not like a surprise thing. Like, my wife and I were trying to have a kid, and now he's 3 and a half and he's out here in South Korea with us. And it's amazing, man. Like, other than being cooped up for 2 weeks in quarantine with him right now, it's been amazing having your son, like, just be so excited to come play catch with you and cheer daddy on and know that I play baseball, and just, he wants to copy that and wants to be a part of it. It's really been such a blessing to have my son around, and you know, having my wife and my son with me now for this season, it's just been even better.
Well, let's talk Korea, because you pitched 2 years at the Marlins, and then you come off kind of a rough 2019 between the Orioles, between the Phillies organization. Offseason 2019, season ends, you're a free agent. What did you think your options were going to be? What were you hoping to get out of free agency?
Well, one thing you missed in there is that I pitched the whole 2019 season with a torn meniscus in my left knee.
I did miss that.
Yeah, because that was never a publicized thing, because that was me going to a team and saying, like, hey, my knees, there's something wrong. It hurts. And them just being like, I even had one point I had a trainer tell me, like, do you think your knee hurts because you're not pitching well? And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what kind of comment is that from a medical professional? But, like, I was, okay, being told, like, you're fine. And at the very end of the season, I was like, the day after they told me I wasn't going back up to the big leagues in Philadelphia, I was just like, okay, like, what, I need an MRI. And they were like, you've cleared your physicals. And I was like, no, like, I slipped and fell in the shower. Like, I need an MRI. And they were like, okay, well, so they got me the MRI and they were expecting to just be like, hey man, like, you're fine. Like, stop. And they were like, hey, you have a completely torn meniscus, and there's actually part of it is a chunk hanging out your south side of your knee, which is probably what's causing you all the pain. And I was like, okay. So we go get that cleaned up, and all of a sudden my velo jumped back up. My command was back. I was able to lift. I was able to run. I was able to do everything. So it was like, no wonder I wasn't able to pitch like I was capable of in 2019. I was doing it with a messed up left knee. And even something as small as that, like torn meniscus, like, yeah, it was like I was recovered and back to work in like 3 and a half weeks. Well, had we taken care of this problem when it first happened, maybe I would never have even been in that situation. But again, it's just part of my journey. It's part of my career. So I get through to free agency. I'm coming off a terrible, terrible year, but I salvaged it when I got sent down. I had a really good second half in AAA, and I'm just hoping for an opportunity somewhere. I'm getting job offers in America for guaranteed $150,000 deals in the minor leagues. And then I get a job offer from Korea that says, hey, we'll guarantee you $800,000 with another $200,000 in incentives. And it's like, well, do I want to take $1 million or do I want to take $150,000? Okay, that's an easy one. So I packed up and I came over here. And this was before we even knew what COVID was going to mean to baseball in America. And so, you know, obviously we made a really good decision as a family to come over here and just have it be a part of our us being here. And so, it was, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was going to happen. I did not expect myself to be here, but that's okay, because I've just learned to just kind of go with things and just go be the best version of myself, no matter where that is. like, obviously I've proven that I'm willing to go overseas to go play this game that I love. And so if it brings me over here, great. If it brings me back home, great. Like, I just want to play this game as long as I can. And I've said it since the day one that I got over here that I just want to be able to pitch in the big leagues when my son can remember it. So just going to keep working for that goal and just keep playing this game and loving every part of my journey.
Yeah, I mean, and you've re-signed with Korea. Is there anything about Korean baseball culture that surprised you? Is there anything we need to bring back home to the States as far as something they do over there that we should probably incorporate to our game?
Oh, this is going to catch you off guard, but they really need to get these, like, the mounds they have over here. Instead of having, like, rubber and then dirt or clay, it's, like, rubber and then, like, another layer of rubber. So, like, all, like, the amateur fields would be so much better off to have this double rubber setup, essentially, instead of, like, rubber and then just, like, a giant hole of dirt. Like, it would change the game so much for coaches all over. Like, if I'm ever a high school baseball coach.
So, like, the push-off area is rubber? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I wish you could Google this or something and see what it has to show you. But yeah, it's like literally like it's two different, the push off area is rubber, so the actual rubber that we're used to in America, and then where your foot actually sits, instead of sitting on dirt, you stand on another step down, tiered down layer of just another rubber, and so there's never a hole. It's amazing.
That is ideal. I'm actually looking on Google right now. I can't find a good picture of it, but yeah, we need to incorporate this in Major
game
League
changer.
Baseball. Yeah.
Absolute game
changer. Wow. How about that? Well, you're right. That completely caught me off guard. That's not what I was expecting. So wrapping everything up, you're obviously not done. You said, yeah, I think it fair to say you'd like to get back to the big leagues, but
yes.
if you could take it back to the day you signed, what do you wish you would have known in retrospect before signing? If you could have a conversation with 20-year-old Dan Straley.
Oh man. If I could go back and just, like, there's really nothing I would tell myself differently. Like, I feel like I learned the lessons along the way in exactly the order I needed to learn them. I learned how to be a pitcher at the right times. I learned, you know, I got drafted as just a thrower, learned how to be a pitcher, just kept developing, kept working hard. And that's kind of been my goal the whole time, is I never wanted to look back and, like, regret something. And I don't have that. And typically that's what we would look back and tell our younger selves, is like something. So I would just look back at my younger self and just be like, hey, just keep working. No matter what, give it your everything every single day and just keep working hard.
I got a quick rapid fire for you and then we're getting out of here, okay?
All right, go ahead.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
Sacramento River Cats, Rayleigh Field.
Favorite big league ballpark?
San Diego.
Best hitter you've ever faced?
Mike Trout.
That's fair. Yeah. Worst minor league bus trip?
Midland, Texas to Arkansas, 15 hours.
I can relate to that. South Korean food that Americans are missing out on?
Their version of fried chicken.
Okay. Last thing, something else in that, you know, something I'll never need to know, but, when does one know that they're a beard guy?
When people start making t-shirts for you and it becomes my brand that I didn't even mean to create. I was just not shaving, like, almost, because my wife always makes me shave when I'm around her. So I was just not shaving. And then when all of a sudden there's Fear the Beard shirts, Australia and Korea, I was like, okay, now I can't shave because this is what the fans expect. And so just to mess with them, I shaved at the end of the season and walked around and no one had any idea who I was. And it was amazing.
Yeah, you're tied to it. Dan Straley, thanks so much for joining from Phenom of the Far. Tell the folks again where they can find your podcast.
They can find us anywhere. You can find any podcast, Spotify, Apple, just really anywhere podcast. And it's the Journeyman Pod. Check it out. We're just telling stories kind of like here. And, you know, we're just trying to keep, like everybody else with these pods, just really trying to tell more and more stories of different ballplayers.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it, Kyle. Take care.
And that's it for our episode with Dan Straley. Big thanks to Dan for taking time out of his quarantine to talk with us about his career. If you enjoyed this one, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you're on Apple Podcasts, rate and leave a review. Also, make sure to subscribe to baseballamerica.com for all amateur and prospect news. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday, so we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.